went over to the nature store, bought it from his widow.
And stayed in business just for a little while.
Yeah, just for a few years.
A few years. Do you know who was the agent for the native store out there?
Abraham Stein.
Yes, I've heard that name before.
Yeah.
As running the store. I never could get figured out which store was associated with which person. Well, then they would trade out there with the goods that they brought out from Barrow to the people that are yeah. around tramping, I presume.
Yeah.
Then when the store collected those furs together from the people that they were trading with, what was the next step? Did they bring the furs back to Barrow to ship them out, or what happened with them?
It usually is Barrow Native Store is the mother store for the other branches. So whatever they had, they bought from the natives, has to be shipped into the mother store. And that's where they taken care of, send them out so they can have goods to trade with that comes by John Batlin Jr., who was trader at the time for Barrow.
Is this the same John Backlund that we were talking about before, or is that his
son? He's the junior, he's the son.
He's the son, oh, okay. Do you know where where did they send most of the furs to? Do you know?
Native store is the one that I know.
Yeah.
They sent their furs down to Seattle Fur Exchange at the time.
Then the native store would probably have been paid in money by the Seattle Fur Exchange. And with that money, they would then buy more goods from Backlund Jr.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just to change the subject, the other day you talked a couple of times about the people when they used to dig for pitch out at the site out there for fuel. How deep would they go to get that pitch? Would they just take stuff off the top, or would they really try to get down into permafrost and get stuff?
Puyala kasi yun yung Diyos. Alawak sa akin, nipokpok, luwasog ba? Kano ratik sige dami, iwakla ka utilangat, kanak si oktok. Kasi dami, wakta kisli unaga, karwa ni litabane. Tapos mga wabak sa dwa. Madagi damat ko, puyat, igap, oksod makwa, pivinin ni Numa makanya punya mikro punya susu nang hari ni. Iga mata umat pelanis. Aci orang orang. Ilanga. Tapi mereka kerja mengait keluar teman nak iga mata. Asyik sama umat mata ibu orang matum mago sama. لأن خيرو عملو إتيورو مكيا كومي إذلو قلرين يبلو يبقتشي إما تايب قوالو بيجيسا يميسا أتيغو شو منقطقنو غما
لما لما أشي قد تكلو
عملو
Like we mentioned some time ago that the pitch can be in different levels. Like for instance, we have mentioned that some houses who are built earlier would be on the lower level. And as years goes by, after that first house that was built gets too old, nobody lives in there, it just crumbles down. And years later, somebody would build another house over it. So, in most cases where we find that pitch, it would be at the permafrost, because what covers that would insulate it from thawing. So it could be somewhere around a foot deep from the surface or more. Deeper than the others. Depends how much sod has been covered over the kitchen area. So presumably it sometimes could have been pretty hard to dig it out if it was frozen.
Yeah. But we don't mind that. As long as we can get into it, we had to dig it.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Dale?
I had a couple questions, actually. One I just thought of, can you give us any idea of how long a house would be? How long would it be used before it got too old to use?
Makhluk begitu manis ya. Si besi tiri blue, kapsi jauki over lini, atau over lapati. Tapi mana kalau rasa cuma.
He doesn't have any suggestions on that. But the house that we live in, or I live in, I don't know how long before it has been built, way before I was born. That was built by my mother's uncle before he moved back to Point Hope. It was built during the boom of the whalers. I told you about part of it is made from the salvaging of the ships. So when I remember when I was a little boy, it was old. He knows it. He had a house next door?
Yeah. We were pretty young. The house that he lives in was moved next to the one that I was raised in. The entryways were just about that far apart. Same direction. And that house that I lived in, it was getting too old, and my folks moved to another building. while I was up east. And back in 27 or 28, either late in the fall of 27 or early in 28, my mother decided to use it for fuel, since they won't be moving back to live in it again. So that was the end of that house. It was real old.
I think you pointed out to me that day the house that they moved into after leaving that.
Yeah. Mm.
Now is that, is the mound or the remains of the house that you lived in next door, is that still visible out there too? I know the mound of the Ikawana house is, you can see the mound and there's a metal building on it. I was wondering if what was left of your house would be like that out there too. He doesn't think or that he can point it at that where the old mouse could be, because how much traffic of the trucks and vehicles been running through all the time. But he can recognize where it has stood before, where that aluminum small building was sitting in right now. Same thing with your house. You don't remember when it was built? It was built before your time?
He doesn't know quite well when the house was moved in, because he lived in a different house with his mother and his father, with his mother's sister. We know that very well. I know very well that the house where he lived in was built in a different location. And the man who take over, this was in the first place was owned by Paul Pausena before he goes up to Canada. He spent quite a few years out there in Canada. And this man had a wife, a sister to Pausena. So after he lived in that house he decided to move the house right where my house was resting, right this next
was,
to it.
This was Paul Pausner that moved the house?
No. Yoya is the name, the one that who moved the house when he took over. Tore it down and built it again, just like the way it was before, but in different location. And then after that, his brother married the daughter of this couple. So that was the time that they moved in after it was moved next to our house.
Well, were these two houses pretty much the same in construction style?
Yeah, about this, just about the same.
And was the style, what we've been looking up, looking at out at the site with the boards coming up out of the ground,
like this,
then a cross piece, and then sod piled up around it.
See, well, I could tell you, she didn't parent invite us, climb up the wall. You could hear it clearly. That means they invite us to come over and eat.
It's time to eat.
Didn't have to go tell you, just knock.
Yeah.
They had little
same way in our house, they knock, they come over.
I remember my mother, because some nails are not small in the house on the floor. She would take a hammer and knock at that nail down through the floor 3 times. Not more, not less. 1, 2, 3. And the next door hears it. Aha, we are invited to have a meal. So these two houses were like that.
It's come on telephone.
Really telephone.
The shape of those two houses are the same. Only their house doesn't have the doorway like I can, like I mentioned to you earlier. It's got the door on the outside wall. Mine, you have to get down in order to get into the house through the tunnel. Because my house was built earlier, while they are still building their houses by ducking down first into the ground.
So any of these houses that we're looking at out here, they could have been moved from another place too, just like people move houses around.
Not like the way they move houses. They had to
take them apart.
Take them apart.
Yeah. Take it apart and reassemble it.
That's what I did with mine. That old store, it was a little too big, the floor was not even anymore. So I had to tear it down and rebuild it before it moved to the other location.
Oh, you rebuilt it before you moved it?
Yeah.
So you rebuilt it over there where it was before,
mm-hmm.
and then moved it over to where it is now.
No, I didn't move it myself. The people who rearrange the streets and the houses do the moving.
Oh, now it's probably the city of Barrow or something.
Yeah.
I have a
back in 63 and 64.
I have a question about this man, John Kelly. I
You've apparently talked about him before, or at least the name's been.
I just mentioned the name.
Mentioned. He had, for a year or two, a small store or trading post down the coast, not far from Atlantic. Do you?
Atlantic?
Yeah. Do you know anything about that, either one of you?
I don't think I ever... Tämä on se kalle, maine kahne blue, sitä kahne blue, klikko jäänyt siuus. Mä muka ingaamme, saa siuun muka rapani, taksakani ja vilkhaan muka, luono maine tieni, atan ogu semmo, se on että maine, se saaru nuki semmo, että maine, juuni jäänyt siuus, teemäni juuri, akas kutaavun ingaisa.
Jeppo, Я богу бахуля тамат калимит алто уга Таван исма Нунаме ине хамани бьё Калит курго Чукулякто асумрай таман исма Ну атам Kirtalo kilometrit paane.
Uuni atano kanyangani tsaangaikis.
Tsaangaikia taamna. Mäkpäijäjä miimma taimane sumisa kaani suukalaan. Kaliin uva kanoktamaane munga tsaangaik. Tsuna aika taivarimma suk.
Pohanoaisamma. Aksuma tabung akto glun ne tamat ko de kam kali go ma sum na ai abuna kali ko ja ru ba lo ko ne ta khabane a pure ho ba ch kanot patem the way he has heard about the name there was a man from Nortau. He mentioned Kelly that had the small trading post around in that area. If he is the same one, we don't know whether he had another station down at Atanak area, but he may be the one that move up to Barrow here, bringing with him some natives from that area, also from Point Hope.
Okay, we're going to move to Stokak, Nikko Tarigap, Toba. Sajayam is Freya Stok. Ini dia guru di New York kemudian ini seni tafsir tuat naga uang nama agak tuat itu mana tuan manis tuak tuat lagi ni cuma lalu ni lingan
lingan ni semua gelar tuan ni aku tak boleh tuat guru mana sih jahat ni. Tak ada taksi merah terlalu ni, semata nak tekan cerang ni, umi apa ni, taksi seorang lagi, lalu ni. Ini setua kape awak tu pengai tu. Asyik, temen aku tahu dulu, temen saya liur, pening, temam walu, taksi aku tak tahu, kaya begini, itu temen temen wan. Tu akan orang tak suri, bila kamu lor.
Tadi tu pergi sekolah tu,
tu pelan angam nak bila tak suri.
Siapa yang ada sekolah tu orang pasang ni. Itu tahu mah ada.
We don't really have the story about Kelly having a store near Wainwright at Atlantic. But my mother is originally from Point Hope. And when they move up to Wainwright, they used to be camping around in that area where you mentioned, close to Atenak, which they call Sirar for seal hunting. The ones that trap furs in winter, also from whales, the baleen they collect, would be sold to the traders in summer. There were no stores at Wainwright at the time in that area. But we remember that when Charlie Hansen had a store at the time, people would come up here and do some trading from Wainwright. And also, there would be that man that I mentioned, Tony Edwardson, with the help of my uncle, John Toklum, would freight some goods down to Wainwright by dock team and trade, do the trading there at the time. And later on, Jim Allen was hired by Liebes Company, and there they put up the trading post there, run by Jim Allen.
I was interested in that. I worked at Sirarugu for two seasons excavating.
Sirarugu?
And the houses there are big timbers out of ships. Sometimes whole walls almost are made out of ship lumber. And I read in Charlie Brower's diary that this man, John Kelly, had a load of goods he wanted shipped to Barrow. And that year, the ice was bad. And they had to unload his stuff just south of Atenak. So he set up a little post there. I think it was in 1891. And spent the winter there, did a little trading. And he had a bunch of Point Hope people with him because he was wanting to use them to whale here. And then the next year, he moved up, I guess, to Barrow, and he sold that building to someone, and they took it apart and moved it up here, I think. But I found an old big rectangular area, which I think was where that old building was. It's a, you know, big rectangular thing like you would expect for someone building.
Just like the way we suggested that if this is the same Kelly, he brought up with him people from Northtop, like Harold
Donnie. Harold Donnie. Yep.
Downey. Yeah.
Downey? Harold Downey.
Harold Downey, who mentioned that that he has lived at Northtop area and brought up with him the people from that area, Harold Downey. Parents, and some from Point Hope, and set up his station here.
Well, the way that Donnie was telling me, he seen that place himself, hell, the place where Kelly used to live, inland, I don't know where, down in North Africa, inland.
Yeah. One year, Kelly, I think it was the first year Charlie Brower came to Alaska, they stayed down by Corwin Bluff or somewhere in that area, and someone gave Kelly some money to go prospecting inland.
That's what Harold Donner says.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of the river now. But
he says he found that place where he used to live when he hunted.
Yeah, that would go along with what I read.
That must have been near where the site is now, near Point Hope.
Yeah, north, I guess, a little bit.
The way he says, he was pretty young that time when he found that place where Cully used to live in the winter. He says he do some mining. And he seen a lot of lumber in there too.
Old lumber. Well, in those whaling boats used to come around, they used to trade. I don't think they ever have stores. In those days, the baleen is pretty high. They say $5 a pound. If a guy had a 5-slap long, he's a guy. That guy to buy a pretty good grocery with those 5-slaps. I used to hear Point Hope and the certain places, mostly here. That's why those whaling boats travel all the way up to Canada, about the baleen. When a guy have 5 slaps of long ones, the people used to say that man is rich. So he could trade pretty good with those 5 slaps.
So the first stores were really just the boats themselves before they...
Yeah.
Must have been a lot of excitement in town when the boats came in, I bet.
Did you read those 50 Below Zero, Charlie Bowers? I think Charlie Bowers, he didn't mention when he wrote those books. I used to hear Charlie Bowers in those days, he lived with the Eskimos. He hung with the Eskimos. He do like a real Eskimo. He's a good real Eskimo in Yupik. Talk. I think he never mentioned when he started to do business.
I don't know exactly when.
I used to hear Charlie Bowers, Fred Hobson, Corden, Tom Corden. Mm-hmm. They used to make a whiskey.
Ah.
They got nothing. Those days.
Mm-hmm.
And they buy whaling gear with a whiskey from the Eskimos. And they start. That's what they start on business. When they get a harpoon and Tarlington, and they start to go whaling. That's their start. Charlie Bowers never put that thing in his book.
No,
he wouldn't.
No, he wouldn't put that in.
Is that right? Is that all right?
That's okay.
The thing of it is, the way I hear it also, just like Ross, when they come up here, they were in partners with some traders. And for some reason, they didn't work out so well among themselves. And the company that they work for just fired them away. They were outcasts. They had to start on their own. That's why it was started. The story is they built some hut way down here, a little bit away from the old village site. And they built a house from the wreck, and they had some molasses and something like that from the old wreck and started to make brew. They had nothing. And they started to sell that brew, that liquor, what they make, to the natives by whaling gear from the natives. The natives were crazy about that liquor too. And they find out that it's good for them. One could make one very happy like that. So that's how they started. According to the story, we hear several times from different people. That's what he mentioned.
And he never put this in his book.
No.
Charlie Bauer, when he was a young boy, he used to stay down in Point Hope. And he used to take care of Point Hope chief dogs. Take care of the dogs, feed them somehow. That's all he can do in those days, Charlie Bauer.
He only knew how to do it.
He lived with Eskimos. And he knows too. And he never put on the same blood he started.
I don't think I would either if I were going to write a book. I just leave that out.
Well, you could let know how he starts.
Somebody told me that if you were in a room and couldn't see Charlie, that you would never know he was a white man when you hear him talk Eskimo. Is that true? Is that good?
Pretty well, yeah. But Charlie Bauer, he hate to see Eskimo starve. Mm. If he don't even have money, he let him have a credit.
Well, that's good.
Well, he lived in Eskimo so many years. Eskimos make him big.
Mm-hmm.
Not done it.
No, that's true, huh?
That's why he's looking at it.
I wanted to ask you a question about fuel. As we've been talking about that before, you know, when they used to use driftwood and seal oil and blubber. And then they came along with the stoves, I guess, little iron stoves, and you said they could start using pitch and coal, things like that. Well, about the time of that the native store was starting up, say, you said that was around 1920, 21 here. What kind of fuel were people using about at that time?
Most people were using blubber. We were burning blubber, mostly.
And were you burning that in a stove, or was that an open fire?
In the stove.
In the stove. At the Eskimo, at the native store, did they sell any kind of fuel?
When it was first started, no, they don't sell any kind of a fuel except kerosene and gasoline for lamps and primus stoves and camp stoves.
Oh, the primus stove.
Yeah.
The primus used kerosene?
Yes.
And they sold the gasoline for the motors. Yes.
Yeah, that was, there's hardly any motors at the time when it was started.
Yeah. But they had a little gasoline, and that's what it was for. It was
for the engines. Lamps and that burn gas.
Okay, some of the lamps burn gas.
Yeah.
Were they using any coal at that time?
Yeah. Some people who had boats even before that, like my parents, that they make a trip to Wainwright once in a great while and came back with a load of coal in their own mill. That's what the story I hear from my mother. And some who are able would buy some coal from the Bravo store, who had a supply of outside coal.
That was probably brought up by a ship.
Yes. And some other people, the travelers, who travel up inland to trap or just go out there to haul some coal from Mead River, would bring it by dock team. And later on, back in the 30s, they started to let people go out to the Pitch Lake out here at Tulimana. And cut up those in blocks, the pits, put it in gunny sacks, and haul it down to the beach for Native Store. Native Store hired these people to do it. And then when summer comes, they haul it back by boat, by launches, by motorboats, and sell it to the people who had money. That's what Native Story is selling at the time.
Good. That's what is the pitch from this lake like? That's not the kind of pitch we're talking about.
It's more sticky.
No.
It's a petroleum, right?
Yeah.
Here's the one that used to work for Native Store in those days. I used to cut the pitch and haul it down. We used to sack, I don't know, maybe 300 sometimes.
300 what?
Sacks.
Oh, 300 sacks.
Yeah. We cut them in blocks, you see, just size for the kind of stuff to put in.
Was this, is this stuff kind of like sod with oil in it, or what is it like? I don't know what it's like.
It is the seepage of the oil that surfaces and spreads out.
Oh.
And as time goes by, it hardens.
Oh, okay.
So that's why, that's how they do it. They cut it in blocks before the snow goes away.
So that stuff is really just pure oil, hard.
Yeah, only it's hardened.
Hardened, yeah. So you'd cut that stuff and then bring it in for the Native Store.
Right.
And that would have been, that would have been in the 1920s, back when they were first starting.
No, 1930s. Yeah, 30.
1930s.
Until, that lasted until the Navy came up in 44.
Oh, that's when they started bringing in the coal from Madison,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, what do you think then, during that period, 1920s and 1930s, what was the most important fuel that they were using in town?
Blubber.
Blubber. And then the second most important, pitch?
Yes.
Yeah.
But blubber was very important then.
Right.
So that blubber was probably very important as a fuel up until 1944, when they started bringing in coal?
Yeah.
Was blubber always very important as a fuel, or were there other things that were important?
for?
People would rather use wood where it's plentiful. But here at Barrow, since the burning of wood for fuel has started, the driftwood along the coast was exhausted, and they had to turn into blubber. So some years later, somebody started to use pits, and the people, when they get short of fuel or blubber, they had to go out to the Tillamook area by dog team, like him and myself would go up in winter by dog team and bring in a load of that heavy stuff in order to have some fuel in the house.
Is that a place that they call Oil Lake?
Yeah.
Is that the one?
The seepage is from the ground and spreads out. Yeah. There were two places there.
Hmm. Is that stuff still there, or did they use it up?
Yeah, it's still there.
It's still up there, but nobody takes care of it right now.
Yeah, nobody. They don't need it now.